Hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of the Physio Podcast. Today, we have a return guest on the podcast. I chat with Vanessa Lee, who is a practicing physio in Toronto, Canada. Not only is she a physio, but she has competed internationally in archery competitions and most recently has been involved as a color commentator for archery competitions around the world. We talk about her current experiences as a physio during the COVID-19 pandemic, as well as her experience commentating for the Archery World Championships. And even towards the end, we talk about the issues of mental health and touch on our own troubles with mental health during this crazy time. I hope everyone is staying safe at home as we hope for things to improve. And I hope this podcast can bring a little joy into your life. I hope you enjoy. So how are you doing? First of all, let's start with there.
I'm doing really well. Thanks for asking.
Yeah.
People have been telling me that self-isolation suits me, and I think I agree.
Oh, really? That's good.
Yeah. I used to joke around with your sisters and like Alex that if I had to stay in my room for 2 weeks, that I would be so happy, and I never thought it would actually come true, but I'm doing okay. I'm doing okay.
Okay. Okay. Nice. So are you working? Are you doing virtual appointments or how is your clinic kind of set that up, or are you not? Are you just completely off?
Yeah, we are continuously having meetings weekly to decide what to do. And it really depends on a lot of the government funding. Right. So we have the CRB set up, and I think everybody applied, but as of right now, you're not allowed to work. You're not allowed to make money while you're receiving it. So as much as we would love to, you know, see people online and do telehealth sessions, we also have to think about our own finances and what's going to be sustainable for the future. So I haven't been seeing anybody. I've just been checking up on people.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause that's the hard thing. I've been on like webinars with like clinic owners and stuff like that. And that's where they're talking about how pretty much if you're not making $2,000 a month, why would anybody really want to work? Right. Because like realistically, like, sure, you want to like treat your patients and stuff like that and stay busy, but like if you're only going to make $500 a month from telehealth or like virtual appointments, then like you have to kind of look after yourself first and get that $2,000, which I 100% agree with. Like it's a weird compromise where it's just like, well, I'd rather not work and then get $2,000. But it's like a hard balance between like, because like once you start, because that's the thing, it's like, it's not even that you can work for free. Yeah. Technically you can't work at all. Right.
Exactly. And I'm hoping that in the next coming weeks or hopefully days that they make a new announcement saying that they're recognizing the need for certain health professionals who need to be working.
Right. Right. But like, how would you think that would go? If, for example, they said physiotherapists are fully allowed to operate, because right now it's just like essential clientele only, really. How would you think that would go if they were like pretty much all physiotherapists are allowed to open because there's that fear aspect of getting touched by someone, right?
Open as in open up our clinics and start seeing people as we normally would?
Yeah, because that eventually will happen, right? But if that were to happen today or soon, like there would be a slow creep back, or at least like I think like it wouldn't be 100% full caseload right away.
Yeah.
It'd be tough.
For sure. And I think if that were to happen today, just I'm looking at the charts and the graphs and the number of new cases, I personally wouldn't feel comfortable. Just because I wouldn't want to put anybody else at risk, my patients or my family members or anyone living in my building. I just don't think it would be the responsible decision to make.
Yeah, because you would, you're interacting with so many people a day. And like that's what's hard. Like obviously, like my mom, Sybil, she is seeing people every day. Probably like a lot less, but like she's also seeing like very essential people that like if she wasn't to see them, they would be in the hospital most likely, right? But there's that thought of, and I talked to her about this the other day, there's that thought of like, okay, if you're getting affected by somebody that maybe is asymptomatic or that you don't know, because obviously if someone is sick, she's not going to see them. If she's sick, she's not going to see anybody. But that's a problem of like, if something does happen, you're now putting not only yourself and that patient at risk, but like everybody else you come in contact with, which is the hard part.
Yeah, exactly. And I just thought of this, but not even just, you know, the people that you come in contact with, you know, on a daily basis, but you still have to go get groceries, right? And yeah. I think that would be putting everybody at the grocery store at risk. So that wouldn't be fair. That wouldn't be fair.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah, but I think everything that your mom, Sybil, is doing is awesome, because there are definitely the patients who need to be seen. And if they weren't, then they would, like you said, probably need to be in a hospital. And I think she's doing her due diligence of making sure that she's taking care of who needs to be taken care of.
Yeah, because that's the hard part. It's kind of like physiotherapy, obviously, is right now very essential in the way that keeping people out of the hospital is not just good for them, but it's good for everybody else as well, right? Because there could be that run at the hospital where like it gets super busy. And obviously if you're just having people come in for avoidable issues that you could be helping them with physiotherapists or chiros or anything, then like that, you kind of have that responsibility, if possible now, as much as possible, to like try to keep people out of hospitals and stuff like that, right? So what would you get, like, are you guys... Or as much as obviously you can tell me, I don't know what your clinic's doing, but like, are you guys thinking of moving towards virtual appointments or?
Yeah, we are. And we're playing around with a couple of different, I guess, programs or apps that we could use. And I think the biggest concern is security and just making sure that everything is going to stay confidential and that it's somehow encrypted. Because we're talking about health information here, personal health information. So we're testing that stuff around. And then currently where we are right now is just waiting to hear from the government about funding and how that's going to work.
What do you mean? Like funding for patients or funding for practitioners?
So funding for patients we know is not going to be an issue for the most part. At first, there was some pushback from insurance companies not wanting to pay for the telehealth, but they are now supportive. So that's not an issue. I guess the issue is funding for us as professionals, if we are going to continue to get that emergency relief benefit or not, if we are working.
Right. So are you talking about that it might be a good idea that you're allowed to get kind of like maybe like a wage subsidy, so you are able to still maybe like get up to that $2,000 while still being able to like perform maybe $1,000 worth of appointments throughout the month?
Yeah, I totally agree.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think there's a downside to having physiotherapists working from home right now. If anything, there's only, you know, negatives that might come from us just sitting at home doing nothing. I think we're a really valuable profession. And the fact that we're sitting here not really making use of our time because we're worried about our own finances is not really fair to us, and it's not really fair to our patients.
No, that's a good point. That's a good point. Are you in contact with any of your patients currently?
I am, yeah. On a weekly basis, just checking in and seeing how they're doing. And a lot of people have been really appreciative. I don't think they really thought that a lot of their physios would be checking up on them, but it has meant a lot. And for me, it's just nice to hear their voices, because I actually do miss seeing them. These are people that I see on a either like weekly or biweekly basis, or I see them twice a week. So it's kind of nice just checking in and letting them know that I'm thinking about them and that I hope that this is all over so I can see them soon.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it is that person to person contact that like we're all kind of missing right now. Right.
I know. Yeah. It's actually nice seeing you, Peter. I know. I missed your lovely face.
I know. I miss you too. Jeez. It's crazy. It's like, yeah, I haven't seen other than my parents, cause I'm obviously at home. I haven't seen anybody else in I don't know how long. I think, we had a guy come fix our heating. That was nice. We talked to him for a bit. Yeah.
Oh, lovely. So, I'm sure he loved that moment too.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Well, I think he's actually busy, right? So he said he was actually really busy. So,
that's funny.
But yeah, I think it's important to like, are you guys providing any like exercise programs or like any like recommendations for people?
Yeah, for sure. Even though we're not getting paid right now, we've made, you know, home exercise programs and given them PDFs so that they can follow that. And just making the biggest concern for me is, I think, patient safety. because I work in the neuro population. So balance issues, a lot of fatigue, also brain injured patients. So knowing when to stop and when not to do something is always a difficult issue when it comes to like home exercise programs. So making sure that everybody has either a personal support worker or a family member there while they're doing these exercises has been a huge priority.
Yeah. So would obviously just like tailor the exercise programs to the person. And are you kind of working with them? Because you have gone to do like home visits sometimes, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you know better what they have in their house and what they have there, right? Because it's all about like being creative and like using random things to maybe like do some exercises. So obviously you're just tailoring them to each person.
Yeah, exactly. I actually love home visits because it's where you see a client where it's most meaningful in their own environments where they spend their days. And I think actually the best part of having to give these home exercise programs has been the fact that now I think they're going to start feeling a little bit more self-efficacious. They're going to see, I can continue to do this on my own. I don't necessarily need to come into a clinic once or twice a week or once every 2 weeks. And I can continue to manage my own health. I think that's been a huge, advantage, silver lining in all of this.
Yeah. Do you think that's going to continue after like you reopen?
I think so. I think we're really planting the seeds with helping patients become a little bit more independent and knowing that they can take their own health into their own hands. So if anything, this might be the most powerful like educational lesson for anybody as a physiotherapy patient.
Yeah, because like the way I look at it is if somebody comes in once a week, maybe it could change. There will still be people that come back once a week after this is over. But there could be a change where instead of coming in once a week, you're coming in every two weeks and then maybe getting like a checkup in between and doing home exercise programs. I forget where I was going with this.
That's okay.
Where was I going with it? And then I don't remember. I had a good point. I think I had a really good point.
I'm sure it was.
Yeah. Jeez. Oh no. Yeah. So I think like the way, the way you can think about it is like, sure, that's great for the patient and everything. And you can look at it in the negative of like, as like a, maybe like an owner or like a physiotherapist and be like, okay, well, I'm going to see less patients then. But realistically, like physiotherapy has kind of been like really good, or like the industry has been like really booming in like the last like 10 years, all the way until like a month ago. And a lot of these clinics have wait lists, right? So instead of maybe seeing you would basically be able to see a larger population group and have a bigger positive effect on more people than just seeing the same people more often, right? So like maybe there's that idea of like, this is spurring more independence and it's going to allow more people to see physiotherapists and actually see that positive of going to a clinic, but also having a home exercise program and everything. And I think that could be the positive out of it.
Yeah. I wouldn't disagree with anything you just said.
Yeah. We'll see though.
There's a lot of positives. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think like, the profession as a whole has to change. And this has been a huge like rude awakening for us to have to suddenly change the way we work. And I think it's probably going to be a turning point for a lot of professions.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was, Bill Gates, and probably just going to do what I normally do and just misquote somebody. And it's probably someone else. but he came out the other day and he said, cause there's obviously like talk of like the economy and like recession and stuff like that. And how, instead of this being the Great Recession, which we've had, this is like the Great Reset, where like everybody gets a reset and like things were good for a long time, but now they maybe need to change in like a positive way. Right. So, and who knows what that looks like. And everybody's trying to scramble and figure that out right now because no one knows.
Yeah, exactly. I can't believe we're living through this right now. I think we're going to remember this until we're old and gray and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, seriously, it's pretty it's pretty crazy. Oh, I'm drinking a smoothie and a chia seed got stuck in my throat.
Oh, it's not the worst thing to get stuck in your throat.
No, seriously. So what have you been doing at home? You are in an apartment by, when was the last time you saw somebody else?
When's the last time I saw somebody? Oh my gosh. Well, I did have to go grocery shopping on the weekend. So that's the last time I've seen another human. Seen someone that is part of my life, maybe about 2 weeks.
Wow. Okay. So a while.
Yeah.
A while.
It's been a while. But at the same time, I am really involved in like social media and I've been making a lot of calls, like video calls to friends. So I don't feel like I've been missing out on much.
Yeah. I find it interesting to watch what's going on. And to me, like the first couple of weeks of what was happening or the first week, everyone's kind of in shock and people are like, what do I do at home? But now people are getting creative and not necessarily creative. They're just using the tools that we've always had and are like, well, I'm alone. So like, I have no other choice. I might as well just FaceTime 20 friends a day.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think it's like when people are kind of stuck in a box, they just get creative and they go, I don't know, I'll just do this.
Exactly. I think this time alone has given me an opportunity to do all the things that I really wanted to do, like really dig deep into my crazy little self and just let it loose. So what I did for the first couple of weeks was I would do like Instagram live videos of me just dancing to whatever songs I wanted to.
Yeah.
And then I would edit it into some videos and just like basically live broadcast my really mundane life here by myself.
Yeah, but people watch it because I've seen your live videos and they're just funny and the people watch it and are entertained. And it's like, it seems so simple, but it's like, it's funny.
What would happen was I was scheduling it for 11 o'clock in the morning and I realized our freaking prime minister, how rude of him, like he scheduled his daily addresses at 11 a.m. too. So I'm quite upset. I need to call his PR.
Yeah.
But his addresses are at 11 o'clock too.
Yeah. We can try to get in contact with him. We could probably,
okay.
I can send him an email. Maybe he can get on a Zoom call with us.
Okay. He does listen to this podcast every day anyways.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I think so.
Okay.
Nice. I think so. I don't know what else he does. So must be it. So yeah. What have you been doing? I see your arrow or your target in the background.
Yeah.
Which I've seen videos of you shooting arrows in your apartment, which is wild.
You know, the funny thing is, I have been shooting, but your sister and your cousin, Chris, as soon as I posted this one video of me shooting, both of them asked almost the exact same question. They said, but what are you shooting into? And it's just, there's something about Bergens and you guys just need to know things about logistics and
just don't,
you know,
what's
actually happening. Yeah. So I've been shooting my bow and it's just fun. It's just so much fun. It's something to stay active and really work on my form. And I just love it. So it's just something else to do during the day.
Yeah. And it's, I would like to say, I assumed you were shooting into a target.
Okay, great.
So I would just like to say I am above them. So you're just working on like your form and obviously it's just fun, right? Like it's like, why not? Yeah,
exactly. I've made a list of all the things I want to work on with my technique. And now is the perfect opportunity because I'm about to go start shooting outdoors when the quarantine is over and when the summer's here. And so I've made a list of all the aspects of my technique that need a little bit of work. For example, my bow arm, my bow shoulder, my anchor point, and my follow through, things like that. So I just started from the first item on the list and I'm just going to try and attack each one week by week and seeing what I get.
Yeah, perfect. And it's like little projects that like that, that's like, well, I have the time now. Why wouldn't you?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, might as well do the things you've always wanted to do and do them now.
Yeah. If it wasn't for this time that I had, I don't think I'd ever really be able to fully attack all these things in my technique. So might as well.
Yeah. And like little things like even like the, with this podcast, about like, we haven't like uploaded anything in like a year. Today's going to be the first time I upload something in a year. And it's be just for multiple reasons. I'm like, and a big thing is like unmotivated, lost a little bit of time and got a little bit busier. Mm-hmm. And when this all started happening, I was like, well, like might as well, like, this is something I wanted to do. Like restart doing this again. So I was like, might as well, I can talk to people then. I was like, this is perfect. I can just, everyone's free. So I can just bug people and be like, I know you're free. Do you want a video chat?
Actually, Peter, I have a thing to do at all day.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I know you have an hour in your day somewhere. what else? So you've been also live streaming with other archers. Is that correct?
Yeah, I have. That's been awesome. And it kind of just happened really organically. I was just video chatting with a friend anyways, and then we decided to, you know, share it with everybody watching. And I think I'm really lucky. I have some friends who have done well in archery. I've chatted with my guy friend, Chef Vandenberg. He's from the Netherlands. He came fourth at the Olympics in Rio. My friend, Sarah Lopez, she's a compound archer. She's won everything out there. And then recently my friend Gabby, who's also from the Netherlands and previously from Mexico. And she's the first Dutch female archer to qualify for the Olympics in decades. So that was been pretty cool. And it's just a nice opportunity for people to ask those archers questions that they don't normally don't get the opportunities to. And it's just been fun. It's like talking with a friend and just having more insightful questions come in that I can't think of on my own.
Yeah, that's a cool thing. I like watched a couple, I think back, I don't know if I caught any live, but like people are just like asking questions and you can just be like, yep, they just ask those as well. Right. So it's perfect, Peter, in that way.
And I think I know these people from a different kind of relationship where we've kind of grown up together and we're friends through the sport, but there's obviously people who are really curious about them as athletes and, you know, certain parts of their technique or mental game or equipment that I don't often think about. So it's kind of cool to be able to share the floor with other people who are also curious about things.
Yeah, because there's so much that goes into it. Like I watched one where you asked somebody about like the mental aspect of things. And like, that's fascinating to me because it's like the pressure, and obviously archery is not the biggest sport. It obviously like, it's not, we're not talking about the NBA, but there's still like massive pressure. Like it's an Olympic sport. Like there's a huge pressure to perform. And like, there's, I don't even know how many people, thousands and thousands and thousands of people around the world that like are competing at a very high level in archery. And like the mental aspect of like the pressure is just mind boggling. And like for something that is so precise that, you're hitting small targets. I don't know how. That's just wild to me. And even though just like small mistakes are just like,
for sure,
I don't know, it'd be so stressful.
Let me put this into perspective for you, Peter. So the mental aspect is almost all of it. Okay. But so you can't see this because it's a podcast, but I have a ballpoint pen here. Okay. So you see that point?
Yeah.
The point of our arrow has to be within the diameter of this ballpoint pen in order to shoot a perfect score, a 10 at 70 meters. So the size of the 10 ring is about the size of a grapefruit. So in order to shoot that 10 ring, the point of your arrow needs to be within the diameter of this ballpoint pen. And in order to do that,
coming out of the bow?
As soon as you shoot it, you can't deviate from that point. So it is about strength. It is about, you know, consistency, but if anything, it's mostly about that mental game and trusting that you're going to shoot a good shot.
That's wild. That's,
I can't do it. I'm not very good at it.
No, it's definitely a sport, and 100% I probably have, and it's always guys that are like, oh, I can do that. They're like, yeah, it's not that hard. You just point and shoot. Like you just shoot it at the circle and it's pretty far away, but you know, I could probably get it. And
Peter, I'm that like, is the I don't exact think so. Thank you. That's the exact reason why I actually started archery, because I was watching the 2004 Olympics with my cousins. We were stuck in a room and my male cousin, who I shall not name, He knows who he is. But he was like, that looks easy. I bet I could do that. So because he said that, I was like, screw you. No, you can't. I'm going to do it. And I'm going to be better than you could ever be.
Of course. Yeah. That's so funny. It's my favorite, one of my favorite questions to ask people. And mostly guys, because they're the ones with the big egos, is something like, how many points do you think you could win off Serena Williams? And guys are like, I don't know, like out of 100, they're like, I don't know, 10. I'm like, zero is the answer. I was like, zero, unless she sprains her ankle, which probably won't happen because she's probably not going to try. Like,
yeah.
I was like, there's no chance, just because I was like, I don't get the reasoning behind you thinking you can play. I've played tennis against you and it sucked. You suck. So, so do I. So,
that's so funny. Yeah,
that's my favorite thing when people can see something and they go, man, it doesn't look that hard.
Yeah. I would love to see that happen.
Oh yeah. I think I shot a bow one time and it didn't go well. I think really? I missed and just gave up. I was like, nah, I don't know. Can't do it. Yeah.
Like, not for me.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man.
That's crazy. So you commentated the world championships.
Correct? Yeah. Yeah, what? That's correct.
I have a lot of questions about that. Okay. What, how did that happen? What, where was it?
Yeah. So I've actually done two world championships now, one in 2017, which took place in Mexico City, and 2019, just last year, which took place in the Netherlands. And I've done one World Cup final. So that happens at the end of every season with the top 8 archers in every category. So you only have the best of the best in the world that year, and they all compete for the World Cup final title. So I did that in Moscow in the fall last year.
How did you get to do this?
Yeah. Sorry. That was your question.
Yeah. It's just, it's such a cool thing. I'm like, when I saw you did that, I was like, that is awesome. And I was like, Vanessa is perfect for it. I was like, how did this happen?
Thanks. So it happened because back in 2017, I was just feeling a little bit down because I was missing my archery friends. I wasn't really that involved, but I really wanted to go to a competition. During the season, I was actually working as it was somewhat of like a volunteer position, but the World Archery was saying that they were going to pay me. I was basically translating a lot of interviews between English and Korean because I'm like fairly fluent in both.
Right.
But at the end of the year, they were saying, okay, we'll pay you for all the work you've done. And instead I said, what if you actually send me to the World Championships? I'll come there. I'll do work for you. Just pay for my flight and accommodations and we'll call it even at the end of the day. And I didn't think they'd say yes, but they did. And it was awesome. And I didn't think they would ask me to commentate, but they did again.
Nice.
And it went really well. So I've learned a lot from that moment and I've tried to apply it to the other competitions I've been to, but I'm always learning about how to do a better job.
Yeah. Cause I wanted to, cause it seems like, again, this is all comes back to male egos. I don't know why. Where guys are like, oh, I could do a good job at that. It'd be like, it's easy. You just commentate on what's happening. Yeah. But what are the hard things that you realize that like you didn't expect that like you went into it going like, oh, I can do this. Like, this is probably what I'm going to do. I'm going to talk about, I'm going to make some fun comments. I'm going to try to be like entertaining, but then all of a sudden you realize, oh, it's different. This is hard or easy or.
Oh, that's a really good question, Peter. But I think there's two main things that I can think of. The first is that it's all for live broadcast on TV and you're selling the rights to these broadcasts to, you know, NBC, the Olympic Channel and like Eurosport. So they need to be very precise in when you're allowed to speak and when you're not and the things you say. So it's not like I just sit there and I'm watching this competition happen and I just say whatever comes to mind. There's very specific times in which you can talk and the length of time you can say something and kind of the content that you want to be saying. So when I first started, I made the mistake of announcing too many scores. If someone shot a 9, I'd be like, oh, it was a 9. But that wasn't very insightful because the viewer can see it. Instead, right, what was helpful, exactly. And it shows up there in the graphics. Instead, I would have to say it was probably a 9 because it was low and I saw them lose a little bit of tension in their backs, you know, stuff like that. And that was a subtle difference. The second thing that's been hard about commentating is that I can't make everybody happy. And so when I first did it, I went and read a lot of comments and, you know, there were maybe 99 positive comments, but there was one comment that said, you know, either maybe I was biased or they felt like I wasn't saying the right things. And it was always that one comment that really tore me up inside. And so that has been really tough. And I don't know if I'll ever get over that, but just trying to stay positive and realize that I can't make everybody happy.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And like, that seems like a good lesson for like so many things, especially, or just things you like share to the world that have the ability to be commented on by a mass amount of people. Because like, I'm sure you did a great job. I can't say I watched the Archery World Championships.
That's okay.
But yeah, there's always that one person or two people, there are three people that like, don't like it. Right. So would you say it'd be like, it's more about giving context to the viewer than obviously, yeah, just like observing, or because like, what was the idea around, or the, was there a plan in terms of like what you were supposed to talk to in terms of like, how much context you were supposed to give to each shot or whatever was happening for people that were watching that were necessarily, or that knew what was happening, or people that maybe that were like me that you kind of had to like talk to and say like, this is like dumb it down essentially. Like, was there a plan in place with like the people in charge that were like, well, you have to kind of dumb it down a little bit. You can't just talk about like super technical stuff. Because sometimes people watching those, like, especially if it's on the Olympic Channel or NBC and I'm watching, they might not know fully what you know.
Yeah, that's actually, I guess, a third aspect that's been a challenge is knowing, you know, the things that you're supposed to be saying and what's insightful. So my job as a color commentator is to be a quote unquote expert and, you know, give anything, any piece of information that an average viewer might not necessarily know. So it's been tough because you definitely need to give that context and education about the sport for people who have no idea what's happening. And that, but then you also have to make sure that you can meet the expectations and add some value to the viewers who have been doing archery their entire lives. So I think I've worked really well with the other commentators. They ask really good questions to, I guess, kind of set me up for, you know, educating about the basic aspects of archery or really technical aspects of archery.
Okay. So it's like, it's obviously all about teamwork and like the group you're in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Did you have any problems with bias towards different archers?
Yeah. I'm not going to lie.
Bias is like inherent in all people. So like, don't think it's a bad thing. If I was color commentating a sport, I would be biased as well. Any sport.
You know, this is probably like my biggest weakness because I have really close relationships with some friends in the archery circuit. I know a lot of the background stories for other archers and the struggles they've been through. And I can think of two examples. So the first is at my first World Championships, the gold medal match came down to a guy from Korea and a guy from Taiwan. And the guy from Korea, I had been his fan since I started archery. He had been off the circuit for 10 years, or he hadn't won a World Championship in 10 years. And it came down to one arrow shoot off. So my heart was racing for both of these archers because it was their opportunity. But what a story if this guy could come back and win his world championships after 10 years with one arrow. So that's a moment when I was really struggling with bias. Another moment was just last year at the World Cup final when my boy, Chef Vandenberg, the guy that from the Netherlands that I did the live stream with, he really struggled with a lot of tournaments. And when he was able to make the bronze medal match, I'm not going to lie, I was rooting for him because I wanted it so badly for him, because I knew everything he had been through. And that's not fair because I don't know everything his opponent had been through, but it's hard to take that personal side out of commentating. And that's something I definitely need to work on.
Yeah. But like, personally, as a viewer, I would rather hear those stories than of the one person than not hear it of both. And I think there's the, I don't know, I have no broadcasting experience, but I think there could be a balance between you sharing those stories, but also just being like, well, like, I just like, I like, you can obviously just like, if you disclose your friendship with them, you'd be like, I'm a friend of this person, I know their backstory. Then I don't think that's you being biased towards them. It's just you sharing valuable information that I would find interesting, because like, I don't know, I got chills when you told me that. And I was like, that'd be so cool if that person would win. And like, that's a cool story I would want to hear, because especially that's how I would get into a sport, is understanding the backstory to these people and what they've gone through and stuff like that. Right. So it's not just the outcomes or like what is actually happening. It's more than that, right? It's not just, they're more than athletes.
Yep. Yeah. I like that. I'll keep that in mind. Actually, that makes me feel a little bit better. And, you know, I think you're right. That's what adds value to any competition.
Yeah. Yeah, which is always cool to see, right? So it's also, yeah, it's awesome that you're able to do that. Are you, obviously, I'm sure most archery competitions are probably postponed or canceled right now. Are you planning, or do they want you to do more, or do you know?
That's a big question. They usually, I usually get an email or a text from the guy who is in charge of communications for World Archery just about a month before a lot of these competitions. And I tell my clinic that, you know, I have to run for this competition for a week and a half, and they totally understand. So the big question is the Olympics.
Yeah.
Would I be able to go to the Olympics to commentate? And I don't know, because the Olympics is so different from any other competition. World Archery itself does not hold the broadcasting rights. I mean, it's the broadcasters from each individual country. So for us, it would be CBC. For the States, it would be NBC. So I don't know if I'd ever be able to, but if you know anybody who has an in, let me know, because I'd love to.
I'll see. When I talk to Trudeau, I'll make a list, and he probably knows somebody there too. So when we talk to him, we'll knock off a couple things.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. So So I messaged you like an hour ago asking if you wanted to talk about the mental health side of what's going on, because we're sitting here. So there's the three of us, me and my parents sitting here, and we're seeing what you're doing on Instagram. And my dad thinks you're going a little crazy, but now I'm learning for good reasons you're going crazy.
Yeah.
So how have you dealt with the mental health side of things? Because I think it's cool, and I think it's really helpful that the conversation of mental health has really increased over the last 5 to 10 years. And it's all come to this point where now everybody's dealing with it. It's not just like a certain population, where like there's days where, I messaged you the other day where I was going to record a podcast with my sister, and I was like, you know what? Like, I just have zero energy. I'm in a bad mood for no reason. Just because like this stuff's going on, it's tough, right? Like,
yeah.
I wouldn't call it like depression or anything. It's just like everybody goes through like tough times. So how have you been dealing with that stuff personally? Because everybody goes through it differently. Everybody has different triggers. Everybody has different ways of coping. Yeah. Do you find it difficult? How have you been dealing with that mentally?
So it has been tough. The first couple of weeks were fine because I was making those dance videos and doing Instagram lives and being a little wacky and whatever. I was just keeping busy, and I was doing things that I really love to do. The past couple of days have been much, much harder. I'm not going to lie. So mental health wise, I personally really struggled this past fall. I went through one of the darkest periods of my life where I actually was hospitalized for a couple of days, and I started medication for the first time, which I never would have felt comfortable talking about until now. And so that has been really helpful. But I guess throughout this whole experience with the quarantine, there's been three main ways that I've been, you know, dealing with it. And I think the first is, yeah, keeping busy, having a schedule, you know, waking up at the same time every day, showering, things like that, I guess are kind of like preventative measures, calling people that I love. The second part has been, you know, I think recognizing when I'm not feeling good and, you know, trying to apply some like cognitive behavioral therapy type stuff. You know, why am I having these certain thoughts about, you know, not feeling good about myself and worrying about the future? Are they legitimate? Do I have evidence to support that they're real? So that's been helpful. And the last is probably one of the most helpful parts of dealing with mental health, but your sister, Jules.
Ah, amazing.
She's my person. And I call her, I message her when I'm not feeling well, check up on each other. And it's been really helpful. I think it was just 2 days ago, I wasn't feeling well and I had her to call. So it was really helpful. And she just asked some of the right questions, but more importantly, she was just kind of there. And that's, I guess, the three main ways that I've been dealing with mental health issues.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for sharing that. I know that's, this stuff's not sometimes, it's sometimes easy to share, right? Like, so I really appreciate that. So like for me, I would say, to break it down, I think into those three categories, the preventative stuff, I think, like for me, it'd be like keeping busy and stuff like that. I found like my days now usually consist of like four or five things that I do that are pretty much the same, whether it's like do some work, do some exercise, relax, maybe do some stuff outside. And it's pretty much just like a cycle of those four or five things that like I can do every day that like fill up my day. Right. So that's good. I would say the thing I'm bad at is the second part where I do start feeling upset or whatever, or just like not happy for whatever reason, maybe something triggers me. And then I get stuck in that. And I don't know how to, like, I'm like, I can't, like, there's like, it's almost like, I'm like, my day's over. Like, it's it. Like, I don't really want to talk to anybody. And I know like probably if I go to sleep and wake up, I'll feel better. So that's what I have trouble with. And obviously like, maybe it's like from being a male or something like that. Like, it's not the first thing I want to talk about with somebody. It's not the first thing I want to reach out to somebody. And I'll tell people like, I'm like, oh, I'm not like, I didn't have a good day. Like just for no reason, just didn't. Like with Juliana, like I was like supposed to do a podcast with her. I was like, I don't feel like it today. And she's like, is everything okay? Like, she's really good at that. She's like, is everything okay? I'm like, yeah, just one of those days. It's just not good. Right. So that's the, where I have the problem. And I wouldn't say reaching out to people is bad for me. Like, I'm still talking to people every day. So that's not a problem, but the issue I find with the mental health side is when I do get stuck in that, and it's like very little triggers, like wanting to go for a bike ride and then my bike tire was flat and I'm like, okay, that, well, there goes my day. And it was like 2 p.m. I was like, well, now I'm grumpy. because a big thing was like, that's what I was going to do for like 2 to 3 hours. I was going to drive somewhere, go for a long bike ride, drive back. So it was going to be like 4 hours. And then all of a sudden it was like, now you don't have that. So I was like, so it's tough in this time when you, especially when you don't have people to distract you. Well, I do have my parents, but like been around them for 2 months and only them for, or a month, only them for a month. And no matter who it is, if I see someone for, I could, my favorite person in the world, if I went beside them all day, every day for a month, I'm going to get tired of it probably.
That's how my cat feels already.
Yeah. And it's so nice to be able to have an animal beside you too, I'm sure.
Yeah. The biggest thing that stood out for me, Peter, is how similar our experiences are, you know, and I think we don't talk about mental health enough. Like you said, we've, you know, it's become less of a stigma over the past 5-10 years, but a lot of the things that you said really resonate with me. You know, it doesn't take much. It could be one small trigger and you think, okay, well, there goes my day. But I think it's so valuable that we're even talking about this now, because it makes me feel like I'm not alone. I feel like I can totally understand what you're going through. And when you said that, you know, you couldn't do the podcast with Juliana, that's how I was feeling yesterday.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing that. And that's what I needed. So thanks for understanding.
No, of course. Yeah. And that's especially, I was thinking about wanting to chat about it with you. And then when you messaged yesterday, I was like, okay, I think this would be an interesting topic because it is obviously still one of those things that people don't talk about a ton. It's more, but like they don't talk about it a ton. I don't talk about it a ton. Me saying people don't, I am included in that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's tough in this time when like you don't have people to like keep you busy, but like, I think it is that thing of being able to like get creative and reach out to people and talk to people. Like I chatted on the phone with someone this morning, like it's good. Like there's people, everybody wants to talk and everybody's going through it. So I think it's one of those things that, especially now that everybody's going through that, I don't know anybody that's not probably having a tough time right now.
Yeah.
I'm sure maybe there's someone out there, but like, I don't see how that would be possible if all of a sudden, because everyone's created a world for themselves around them. And then all of a sudden that's now taken away or just adjusted. And that's tough, right?
Yeah. And I think we don't have all the answers. Like I said, you know, there's a couple of ways that I'm coping with preventative measures, with early recognition and reaching out to Juliana or like my friend, but there's definitely the moments where I don't feel good still, even though that I'm doing those things. And I think it's not bad to let yourself feel that.
No,
give yourself the time and, you know, bounce back when you're ready.
Yeah. I don't think everybody needs to be chipper and happy through this at every moment. That's impossible. Yeah. And yeah, it's just, I think recognizing that and trying to actively not fix it, but like help the situation. Right. So whether that's like going for a walk or obviously it's different. Like I live in the middle of nowhere, so I can go outside and not see anybody, but yeah, it's doing those little things like maybe picking up the bow for like an hour and like just distracting yourself from like negative thoughts or whatever. Right. So it's interesting how it's everybody's own like problem to deal with. Yeah. And that's what I think people think. It's like, okay, this is my problem in my head. I got to fix it. But like, sure, like different people have different ways of fixing it, but like, that doesn't mean everybody doesn't have the same problems. Right. Mm-hmm. And maybe like sharing those creative different ways, like even like you said, like waking up every day at the same time, showering. I haven't showered today. And I know it probably would make me feel better, but I haven't. Yeah. So
well,
like
I
stuff
hadn't
like
showered
that
for 4 days.
Pardon?
That's what I hadn't showered for 4 days. That's why maybe my past couple of days weren't so good. But I showered today and I'm feeling much better. It's crazy the difference it can make.
Interesting. Yeah. 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 Because like, that's what we're so used to is routine, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Or creatures of habit, I think they say. Sorry. Yeah. They're really loud outside.
Oh, I can't hear them. It's fine.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Yeah. No, it's okay. It's an interesting topic, but I hope you feel better throughout this whole thing and keep posting videos about shooting arrows because it's interesting. I want to be able to do that. That would be so much fun.
Anytime. I'll find a bow and arrows that are long enough for your drawings because you got some nice long arms, Peter.
Yes. Yes. I think we're trying to create a golf course in our backyard. Yep. Why not?
You know who loves golf, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm telling you.
Yes.
Considering having a quarantine golf tournament,
Oh my gosh. Where we just stay 2 meters apart from each other.
Or just like you come and like, you might have to play by yourself.
That sounds amazing. I love playing golf by myself. That's yeah. the best.
It's very therapeutic and frustrating at the same time.
Yeah. Well, no one has to know that you gave yourself 3 mulligans.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It will be completely based on the honor system, which,
which I have none.
Perfect. Yeah. So that it's things like that. That I'm like, we're like, why not? I don't know. Like, it's pretty much just cutting grass. So, well, obviously to build an actual golf course, it's hard, but yeah. We just want to hit golf balls. That's it.
That's, I think, reason number 6,704 why your family is amazing. Not that I needed any more, but you guys are so
yeah.
cool.
Yeah. Well, we're trying our hardest. We'll create a different sport. I don't know. Yeah. We don't have enough sport tournaments. So we need another one.
Yeah. Another one. Great. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm pretty excited about it. I'm probably going to work on it this afternoon.
Awesome. You'll have to send me some photos and updates then.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll, whenever we get our golf course ready, it's like a modified golf course. I don't think there won't be any like putting, there won't be any holes. It'll just be like, here's a stick and get it within like a meter of the stick. And then congratulations, you finished the hole.
Awesome. Well, that's all you need to do.
Yeah, exactly. No, we don't want to putt because putting is also like
putting.
Yeah, and that's way too much work to get an actual putting green.
Yeah.
No, that's not going to happen.
No, it's all about the long game.
Yeah, exactly. It's more fun that way.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing. Well, I have no other pressing questions for you, unless you have anything you would like to announce or say or. Any inventions you have, feel free to share them.
At this point in time, no inventions, but I do want to say I love you guys so much.
Oh, we love you too.
You're amazing and your voice is buttery smooth. Your family is incredible and you guys mean so much to me. So thanks again for letting me be part of this podcast.
Oh, no, thank you. You're the first 2-time guest other than Sybil because she lives beside me. So yeah. That's easy. Katja has yet to be on it. She will be on it next week. That's my sister. Yeah. So Juliana's been on it now once. Unreleased podcast probably will be released tomorrow. So there you go.
I'm honored.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, thank you for doing this. It's been fun. We'll do it again because I know you don't have anything much to do. Amazing. Thanks, Vanessa.
Bye, Peter.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you again for Vanessa for coming on the podcast. If you, the listener, ever have any feedback at all or want to get in touch with me, you can reach me at peter@firstclassrehab.com and I'll be sure to respond. We have a couple other podcasts lined up soon, so make sure to stay tuned for those. I hope you have a wonderful day.